It was as loud and as excited and believing in this Mets team as I've ever felt.
Then the game started.
And then Severino was sloppy with the defense. But even after the first two innings, the Lindor strikeout with the bases loaded kind of that was their chance to get back in the game after the sloppy defense. And then it was all downhill from there. Reed Garrett put the nail in the coffin. And that was that. I mean, Shohei Ohtani at that point, the game was already over. Mets weren't scoring. But if I were to ask you, what you think, because the call called up before, I think it was Antonio. Oh, well, the Mets walking too many guys. That's the problem. To me, there's one clear problem. I'm curious to see what you would say. What do you think is the biggest problem so far through three games for the Mets in this series?
If you don't hit, you can't win.
Bingo. This series coming in, we knew. We've said it. You and I talked about it many times. I talked about it on SNY, on Baseball Night New York. If they don't hit, they are not going to beat the Dodgers. Their pitching, gassed or whatever it may be, is not good enough to shut down the Dodgers and play the way that they've been playing against Milwaukee, where, all right, 1-0 deficit or 2-run deficit, or against Philadelphia, yeah, Zach Wheeler dominating the Mets lineup, but it's 1-0 until you get into the bullpen. That's not how these games are going to be played. You're going to have to score early and often against the Dodgers. So really, the walks don't matter. The defense, although last night I thought that's what caused them, that's not the biggest issue. The biggest issue is that to beat the LA Dodgers, you're going to have to score early and often. And this Mets team, in two of the three games, has not scored, literally, at all. Forget about early or often. They haven't scored, period.
I don't think they're getting shut out twice the rest of the way, but I don't think there's going to be enough of an offensive recalibration, so to speak, that's going to change what I think is going to happen in the series. Because, yeah, I mean, the shutouts are a bit of an anomaly here. But if you look at Brandon Nimmo and his entire season, I mean, from day one, from when they left Port St. Lucie and started their season against Milwaukee, right? Yeah, they opened up against the Brewers. That's right, because Hoskins with the play at second with McNeil. Yeah. So from that day until now, Nimmo, I'm not saying he hasn't had moments, but he has been less than expected. Why do I think that's going to change? I don't. Outside of the occasional moment, which won't be enough. All year, the conversations around Pete, he gave you a couple of all-time Met moments, but in totality, less than expected. I don't think that's going to change.
See,
Alvarez missed a lot of the season, and then when he came back, clearly, and it's getting worse, less than expected. I don't think they have enough juice.
Yeah, it may be true, and if that's the case, they're going to be going home. Hey, maybe the series doesn't go back to L.A. Maybe the Dodgers wrap it up here. If they don't hit, that will be the case. It can't be just Lindor and Vientos every single night. They're not able to get it done every night. The majority of the time, they're going to have to, but I do think at some point, Nimmo or Alonso or some of the guys at the bottom of New York, to me, though, you're putting in J.D. Martinez, you're giving up a spot. You're sticking with Alvarez, fine, the potential, but now look at that hole. So now you have two holes almost automatic in the lineup. Iglesias, he's come back down to earth and doing what you kind of expected, where he's not hitting 330, OMG, and all that stuff. He's, you know, and by the way, even outside of the actual getting the job done, look at the Mets, and we talked about, like, with the Guardians. We'll get into the Yankees and Guardians coming up a little bit. But you look at the lineup and say, okay, well, where are the big threats in that lineup? Where are the power threats in the Mets lineup? It's Lindor. It's Vientos. It still is Nimmo, to a certain extent, but lesser, and Alonso. Outside of that, like, J.D. Martinez doesn't have any power anymore. Marte's not a power hitter.
They just pitch Martinez outside, and he keeps flailing away at those sliders on the corner.
So once you get beyond Alonso, who's the threat to Homer? Is
nobody.
Marte?
That's why I play Winker. At least he's got some juice in his legs.
Correct. Iglesias, no. Taylor, no.
Nope.
Bader, no. McNeil, no. Like, you go over the bench, whatever. Alvarez, at this point, he's not even a threat to get a hit. Like, yeah, in theory, he should be able to one swing, change the game, but
and Sal, I don't even think Nimmo's a power threat at this point with his legs. He has no legs.
Okay.
I feel really badly for Brandon Nimmo. I hate that this is the way it's ending. But the first swing and then the second was kind of alarming as well. It almost looked like Kirk Gibson tried to take a swing.
Yeah.
He's got 3, 4, 5 more games in him, let alone the World Series.
I'm not going to give up yet, but Nimmo and Alonso are killing this team. Everybody's making a big deal about Alvarez.
So is Lindor, Sal. He's 1-for-11 with 1 RBI in this series. And he struck out last night with the bases juice.
Yeah, that's fine. But they played three games. Like,
I got you.
And he hit the game-changing home run that won them game two. So, like, if Lindor wins a game, that to me is enough through three. Now, he's going to have to do more, yes. But Nimmo and Alonso have done nothing. They're killing them. Everybody's focused on Alvarez. Alvarez the nine-hitter. Like, it's not about Alvarez.
But he wasn't supposed to be the nine-hitter.
But he is.
Which is why I think he gets more... more attention. You know, like they, there was a boy who batted second a couple times last year. You
right,
know,
but in this
fifth,
lineup,
fourth, right, a few times
you,
in there.
You think it's a bigger deal that Alvarez is struggling right now or Nimmo and Alonso?
No, no, it's the veterans. No,
but nobody's calling and talking about Nimmo and Alonso. But it's all about Alvarez, and you're looking in the wrong places. Yeah, Alvarez should have been benched last night. I don't think he should be today. I know you do, and that's a different disagreement, but we're talking about the nine-hitter.
And for the record, I know he's not going to be benched. Yeah, I'm saying I would bench him.
By the way, just to clear that up, oil game in the set. So 31 starts for Quintana, 17 with Alvarez, 14 without.
Okay, so I said 20. That's a fairly big sample close. Size. There you go. Oh, that's
and
okay.
And he started to turn the season around at the end of August. But he anyway, did. So forget Alvarez, the nine-hitter. Nimmo and Alonso have to get the job done. You want to extend beyond that DH spot, whether it's J.D. Martinez or Winker.
Play Winker.
Yeah,
and you got to play Winker tonight.
They went with Martinez last night, and he did nothing. Again, all right, let's get back to the calls. Victor is in Orlando, Florida. What's up, Victor?
Hey, good morning, Sal, BT. Good morning.
Hey,
I love you guys. I listen to you guys every day.
Thanks, man.
Sal, I respect you. You're very knowledgeable, just like as BT is. But I have to agree with him. I think the Mets are done, number one. But guess what? I don't think the Yankees can beat the Dodgers either because I personally think the Mets are a better team. So I just want to hear your opinion about that.
Better than the Yanks? I mean, that's so convoluted. Yeah. It's fun. And thanks for the call, Vic. He's got us up in Florida, the free Odyssey app. If you missed anything, hit rewind. You're good to go. Thank you, Vic. But I don't like right now, that's insignificant. That means zero. All that matters, and again, we'll get to the Yankees coming up in a bit. Like the Yankees and Guardians, that's all that's on my radar. And the Mets and the Dodgers, that's what's on my radar. Now, I will give you this. This is the first time last night. When it became 4-0, that was the first time in my heart. I didn't tweet it because I don't care about it. I thought it. I'm like, no Subway Series. That's the first time I'm like, it's not happening.
Yeah, I didn't think it was happening anyway for one way or another. I thought the Guardians put up a better fight. I just didn't think I thought it was more likely. I don't know if I said this on the air or we talked about this off the air. I thought it was more likely that neither team would make it than both teams.
You said that on the air?
Yeah, because it was just a foregone. Like, everybody made it a foregone conclusion. Oh, it's happening. Here they are. The Mets beat the Phillies and the Yankees beat the Royals. Hell they play? Yeah, the Royals. And now they got the Guardians. Here we go. it's not that easy. Now, the Yankees, through two games, have made it look that easy. The Mets, obviously, through three, have not. And they've got work to do here. But yeah, it's not about the Mets or the Yankees. And I could see why you would say, Victor, like BT, saying that you believe the Dodgers are going to win the series because maybe you felt that way before. And if you felt the Dodgers were the better team going into the series, you certainly would feel like that after watching three games in which the Dodgers have convincingly won two of them. However, to me, the series can change very quickly. I even said after game one that even if they lost game two, I wasn't giving up yet, because I wanted to see them come back to Citi Field. Last night was another body blow for this Mets team, but they've responded every time. I fully expect them to do it tonight. If they don't, I promise you I'll not come back tomorrow and say, all right, 3-1, their backs are against the wall, here they are. I will not. If the Mets lose tonight, I then believe that the series would be over. Even if they lose, if they win tonight and lose game five, I don't know how convinced I'd be that the series is over, but I don't believe the Mets will win two in a row.
Who would be pitching game six? That would be Manaea.
Well, that's the thing. That's
why, Manaea, right?
That's why I wouldn't bury them yet, is because they have Manaea and Seve. The two best going in game six and seven, potentially.
And Seve had pretty good stuff. It was his glove. You're right.
Yeah,
we talked about
that.
And he's usually an awesome fielder. Quick question for you. I don't want to derail with this, but I am curious. I think asking you this right now is pertinent. So, Alonso's home run in Milwaukee brought back a lot of fan equity.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't have a number because there's no poll that actually gives you the exact percentage. In my opinion, I think my rough estimate, about 80% of Met fans were like, you know what, all right, Pete, it's been good, but it's time to go. Before the home run, you know, that saved everything, right? He's 1-for-11 right now. It looks awful. No ribbies. Let's just say, and he's hitting 0-91. If Pete goes 3-for-24 with 9 punchies and 2-3 ribbies, feeble, and the Mets lose in 5, do you think the equity within the fans that he got back for the Milwaukee home run, do you think most of that dissipates in energy for him to return?
I think it's already dissipating.
That's an interesting answer.
I think it's already.
Already.
He's got to do something here in the series.
Yeah.
He's on thin ice. He was on thin ice to begin with. He hits that magical home run, the incredible home run. Everybody then loved him. Even though he had a good series against Philadelphia, a couple of home runs, I think people are starting to be reminded of why they were ready for Pete maybe to move on in the first place.
Yep.
If he does not, look, dude, he's got to hit here. They need their bats against the Dodgers. He's got to hit. Last night was a step in the wrong direction in that particular case. Pat is, because Walker Buehler was a guy that he had owned before that. Pat is in North Caldwell. What's up, Pat?
What's up, guys?
Hey, Pat.
Listen, that guy made the point before. He's right. It doesn't matter how much you win by. It just matters how many games you win. So with this team, anybody down on this team, I think they proved enough that, listen, we're down 2-1. We'll see what happens tonight. Do I think the Mets are going to win this game in, you know, six? No. If the Mets are going to win this series, it's going to be in seven. You know, they're not, you're probably right. They probably won't win two in a row. They're going to have to go back and forth unless it's six or seven. Let's just see what happens. With your point with Iglesias, there's no way you can bench him. The guy started in September, had a 22-game hit streak coming into the playoffs. Mm-hmm. He's got a hit in every game but two playoff games. So
who do you, let me ask you, Pat, who do you think's a better hitter, Jeff McNeil or Jose Iglesias?
This year, Jose Iglesias.
Okay, no, I said who's a better hitter. And if you want to say Iglesias, that's fine. To me, McNeil's the better hitter.
Okay, but to me, with what he did this year and what he's done.
What's he doing now?
And what McNeil's done. He's got a hit in every game, but two. What do you mean?
Iglesias, every time he comes up, he does nothing. Have you been watching him? He's got a hit in every game.
What are we talking about? Listen, whatever. It is what it is. He's not the reason. Well, your point you're making is correct. Pete, and honestly, Brandon, I would say Nimmo too, but he's hurt. I mean, I've had plantar fasciitis. It is so painful. I don't know how he's doing it, and he might be somebody that's going to have to get replaced by McNeil. And we'll see. And with Lindor, he has enough equity that he's been hitting the ball in the screws like BT's been saying, just like, you know, with Volpe. He's hitting the ball in the screws. He's missing a couple shots. Mm-hmm. They're going to be all right. Trust me. We're going to be there.
So there you go, Pat. Positive Pat. Forget about positive Tommy.
Thanks for the call. I wouldn't be shocked. I'm not going to say the Mets are going to do it. I'm saying I'm not burying them after. It's 2-1. Like, this is what happens in the majority of series. It's either going to be 2-1 or 3-0. Like, the Yankees are going to look to make it 3-0 tonight. Now, 2-1 might feel a little different after being down 0-2 and the disparity that we felt with the Yankees or Cleveland than it is with the Mets. I'm not, the Dodgers threw a haymaker game one. The Mets punch right back in game two. Dodgers throw another body blow. Mets have to punch back now. That's how these series go. And then if they do, then it's going to be all on the line in game five, because I really don't think the Mets are going to win both there. But I wouldn't be shocked. Like, to me, I think the Mets could still win this series in six. Got to win the next two at home. And then with Manaea on the mound in game six. I don't know about a game seven in L.A. We have to see how that plays.
That's a big ask. I think, Pat, with the McNeil playing left field for Nimmo, given his injury, I don't think Mendoza will do it. It's something that I would really consider. I'm not taking out Iglesias for anything. I love him. And by the way, I think he's better than McNeil. He's better than, like, right now. And right now is all that matters. I think he's better than McNeil.
And he's a better hitter than Jeff McNeil?
I do. I think he's better on the bases. I think he's a tougher out, yes. And I've always liked McNeil because, you know, he's a bat-to-ball guy, mm-hmm. and he uses the whole field. And I generally like his approach, and I thought he'd have a big year. Our bet, I thought, runders, I said he'd be over 290, not even close. So I'm a McNeil fan, but I'm going to ride this. I'm going to ride this Iglesias train forever. The thing about this, now, if you're just tuning in, right, let me let everybody in on a little secret about sports radio. There's a ton of nuance, which is why we want you to listen to the whole show. But you don't start a show saying, Mets can win tonight. Mets can lose. I don't know. I'm not sure. Like, it's my opinion that the Mets will lose the series. I said that before the series. Right. I said that at the outset of the show. And I'm saying it now at 11:18 in case you're just tuning in. I believe the Dodgers will be in the World Series. Sal, he believes the Mets are not buried. And by the way, he should believe that. So, I mean, this stuff is fluid. I know nobody wants to hear it, but all you can do is react to what's in front of you. And right now, to me, and I have not, even though I've felt that the Mets have overachieved a lot this year, I never once felt that they were.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
BT and Sal back on the fans. So the Yankees also have a game tonight.
Inferior to the Dodgers.
You got the Yanks coming up at 5:08, game three of their series. Of course, Mets game four in what has become a borderline must win for the Mets here. You got Clark Schmidt, your boy on the mound, BT. How many punchies you think Clark Schmidt gets tonight?
I mean, I'm not going to go overboard. I don't think he's going to go incredibly deep. I mean, five, maybe six.
Five punchies, six maybe, punchies?
You know what I love about Schmidt? Like, and I don't know that I feel this way about Luis Gil, only because he's been on ice for so long, even though his stuff, when it's on, is better, more electric than Schmidt. Clark Schmidt gives the Yankees, he's going to put up some early zeros.
Right.
And he's going to give them a chance to just kind of ease into the game and then let those quality at-bats, whether it's seven or eight walks or eventually a home run from Soto or from Judge or it's perfect. Like, I love that he's on the mound tonight. And feel good. Yankees, listen, we could quibble about, could they look better? Sure, they could look better. But as I said yesterday, best DRA so far of the four remaining teams. Yankees, highest OPS Yankees, highest batting average Yankees. Yankees up 2-0. Feeling pretty good.
By the way,
yeah,
his over-under tonight, 4.5 punchies.
Look at that. 4.5
for Clark
Schmidt. Yeah.
That's an odd quote. You try to bait me into something here. The fact that you're asking me this bizarre way to start the Yankee conversation. So what's going? Is he hurt? Did I miss this? I miss a tweet? Like he's not getting the starts?
No.
What's going on?
I know you love Clark Schmidt.
I love him, but I don't love him as a strikeout guy. I never said that. I just love his approach and his mentality.
I know you love the punchies, though.
I'll say slightly over. Give me five spot. Give me five. Give me five punchies there.
Yeah, there you go.
You said 4.5 the over under? We'll go over.
No, I know you love the punchies. Look, Yanks tonight, how can you not have anything but confidence in them? Although, I am expecting Cleveland to be better.
So am I.
Okay, so if they're at least better, then we'll maybe get a little bit of a test.
Mm-hmm.
And look, the Yankees have been playing. They're still not where I expect them to be or where I want to see them be. They feel comfortable about winning a World Series, but they're far better than anything the Guardians have put out there or the Royals before them. But I do expect Cleveland to at least button up a little bit. Now, they just don't have enough, Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. But if there ever is going to be a punch back, it's got to be in game three tonight, obviously. And then maybe have a little bit of a series.
I would still be a little surprised if the Yankees sweep them. I think they put them away in five. I do expect the Guardians to win one of these games out there.
And which one?
I don't know. I don't really have a great sense for that. If anything, I'd probably say, I could go either way. I could say tonight because there's desperation, blah, blah, blah. But also maybe tomorrow because Heal doesn't have real command of the zone. I could see a lot of traffic early on in the game. And maybe you got to get to the bullpen early and he's a little wobbly. I'll say that they, maybe game, I don't know that I can. I'll say game four. I think the Yankees still win it in five.
So if the Yankees lose tonight, because I'm trying to see how we could get a series here. If somehow Cleveland is able to win a game, which I know right now feels impossible, but if Cleveland wins a game tonight, would you be a little, not like scared or nervous, but like a little at least concerned? Hey, we got Luis Gil, your fourth starter going against Cleveland. All of a sudden, now if they win that, now you're like, uh-oh.
Yeah. I think I'd be I'd have some heightened emotions. Like, right, I'm certainly not trying to sound, overly complacent here because I'm not, because you don't win till you win. But, I mean, I fully expect the Yankees to win the series. And when you're up 2-0, it's easy to feel that way. I think it would really depend on if they were to lose tonight and they lose because Ramirez hits a home run and so there's carryover from his at bat against Weaver, late the other night in game two. All right, so maybe I'm saying, Ramirez, who was amazing, a top five, top six player, if he starts get going tonight. My eyes would be a little more wide open. I've got great respect for Kwan, terrific contact, high average. I know they're going to catch the ball better. They might get loose on the bases. If they were to lose tonight, 6-2, Ramirez has three hits, and Schmidt gets dented early, and Judge doesn't do anything, then there's a few storylines that are going in the direction of the Guardians, which would, honestly make me feel slightly different about what's going to happen, slightly.
I think the only thing that can make me feel different about the Yankees is if Holmes or Weaver get, like in a big spot, Holmes comes in and gives it up, or Weaver blows the lead. Because that then, even if they beat Cleveland, that would worry me. Right now, their superpower has been their bullpen.
Yeah.
And if that starts to show a little, you know,
erosion.
Yeah,
or,
whatever. Yeah, like yeah. a little, hey, Holmes can be beat in a big spot. Or, hey, Weaver, like a home run by Ramirez the other night is not really, that's just whatever. It wasn't a big spot. All right,
it challenged him. Yeah, exactly. I got you.
It's going to happen.
Yeah.
But when they faced each other in the prior game, I think it was, yeah, it had to be game one, when Ramirez came up with two guys on the spot to really do some damage,
100%.
We got the best of them. So, yeah, to me, if those guys give up runs in crucial spots, that's when maybe from a Yankees standpoint, I start to get a little nervous about the series.
Yeah, and listen, Clay Holmes, who's always in a high leverage spot now, even though it's middle frames rather than last inning, and it's worked out well, I feel like I know his demeanor and I know who he is, right? And he's much better equipped to handle this role. I know Luke Weaver's stuff. I don't know his temperament, how he bounces back from a rough moment. Now, again, the Ramirez home run the other night.
We haven't seen it.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And being a closer, there's a lot of guys who are filthy, who throw high 90s, will wipe out sliders or knuckle curve, whatever the secondary pitch is. You know, nasty changeups that dart a foot and a half into the dirt. I mean, Weaver, to me, he's got all the components to be a lockdown, honestly, like Mariano Light kind of closer. He's got that good of stuff. But do you have the heartbeat? Do you have the mind? And if he were to get dented late tonight or tomorrow, whether it's the Guardians or the Dodgers or the Mets down the road, you don't know how that adversely affects him. I need that answer. Well, actually, I hope I don't get that answer, but I'm very curious what the answer would be.
BT and Sal on the Fan. Rob is in Westchester. What's up, Rob?
Hey, Rob.
Hey, boys. How are you guys?
Good. What's up?
Pretty good.
Hey, you know, this is an interesting time. You know, previously I had called up, you know, Sal, start with you. Mean BT, man, we had to dig you out of the sewers, bro. This was back in June. I'm glad to see you've changed your tune, that you're up on the Mets. You should be. No matter what happens, guys, I'm so proud of this team, right? Like, it's unbelievable what they did. The teams that they had to go through to get to this point, it's unbelievable. Now, with that being said, I gotta change gears to BT here and pick on him a little bit.
Okay.
I have a question for you, BT, and you're my guy, but I need you to admit this on the air.
Go ahead.
Are you willing to admit the path for the game series? Are you willing to admit it's basically layup lines at this point? I mean, compared to the National League, can you call that layup lines? And do you see what I'm saying here? Are you willing to admit that?
Listen, Robbie, in layman's terminology, what you want me to do is say on the air that the Yankees' path to the World Series is a lot easier than the Mets or whatever, and that I should contextualize that more. You know what? I'm not. Because it doesn't matter, dude.
No, but it is. You have to acknowledge it.
It doesn't matter.
You're right.
I don't acknowledge anything. Whatever. You get to the World Series or you don't. You win the World Series or you don't.
Right, but it's a simple question.
But it's a simple question.
I mean, it's not like the... I'll agree with you. It doesn't matter, ultimately. Like, the Yankees are going to be there. The Mets might not. But you can't say that the path hasn't been easier.
Well, I won't give him that satisfaction.
It's a layup
line.
There's
no need to.
You mentioned JV. I mean, yeah, the Royals, they're not even JV. What's below JV?
The freshman squad?
Yeah. Come on, freshmen. The Guardians, that's a championship team? I mean, come on.
Let me ask you, so as we
have... It doesn't matter. You're right.
Yeah, I got you. So Judge is number one for the MVP. Witt's number two. Ramirez is three.
Yeah.
You keep talking about the Guardians like they're the Marlins.
Why? Because I watched them play. But look at their lineup. Yeah, I mean, the Marlins might actually have more potent hitters.
Now, listen, don't take this the wrong way, because I don't watch them play every night either. But if we, I'll say we, if we watch them play every night, but now I'll say you, I think that you would have more respect for them on the air. Their bullpen's the best. They have the number one rated defense in baseball. Now, is that as sexy as a Soto Judge combo or Lindor doing damage or Otani and Betts? The answer is no. But there's many different ways to win baseball games.
Here's what I saw.
And those for everybody.
I was on hand to see it. I saw a team that everybody says is a great defensive team drop a pop-up that my dog would have caught. And I'm pretty sure I could see it from the press box. The spill down the leg of BB or whatever his name is, as he wet himself at the thought of pitching at Yankee Stadium. Bybee, whatever. Okay, who cares? Sucky is what he is. The Guardians were pathetic. Every at-bat, these guys come up. They're terrible. Now, you're right. Like, would I have a different appreciation for him watching him every night? Maybe, yeah, against the White Sox or against the Twins or the Royals. I respect Sal Perez with Kansas City.
Hall of Famer.
Bobby Witt did nothing in the postseason. So, to me, like, again, now, how much of it do you want to credit the Yankee pitching versus how much do you look at the lineups? I just look at these lineups and I'm like, these guys, they're no good. They're just no good. They're no good. Look at the Guardians. They're terrible. You couldn't pick these guys out of a lineup. This is an American League championship roster. The manager, forget about even what I've watched or what I haven't watched. The manager pinch hit for his starting catcher, who's an offensive catcher. Like, the guy's in the game because he's an offensive catcher. and he pinch hit for him in the third inning or whatever it was of a championship game. What?
And then, by the way, not to give you fuel because Lord knows you don't need it, but the guy that he put in there, the defensive catcher, came up at a big spot when they took out the offensive catcher. Listen, I mean, yeah, it's not Alomar or Manny or Dave Justice or Marquise Grissom or Tomei. Now, I know it's different. I don't care. What was that caller's name who wanted the satisfaction?
Rob, right? I think, yeah.
Rob, I can't give it to you, buddy.
But why not?
Because that feeds into the narrative that, like, so.
You just acknowledge their path. Like, we all know it.
Acknowledge anything.
Everybody listening knows it. Boy, are you a Yankee fan?
I don't know that I know it. I mean, what?
No.
Oh, are you a Cubs fan?
Correct.
Cubs fan.
Go to Chicago, will you? What do you think? The Yankees had an easier path to the World Series than the National League?
They're not there yet.
Who cares?
Exactly.
Okay, but that's a different argument.
But it's the only argument that I care about. It's the only one that I choose to acknowledge. I don't care about the other stuff. It's stuff that means nothing pertaining to Game 3 or the next series.
But the caller asked a question.
And like, I generally like to,
why can't you just admit that the Yankees have, like, we all know it, and it doesn't mean anything because they're going to get there, right? Mm-hmm. We think. Everybody thinks they're going to get there. It's a foregone conclusion.
They'll be waiting.
Everybody thought that before the series, and now they're up 2-0, so most people would say that it's going to happen.
Yep.
They're going to get there. It doesn't matter how they get there, how they win, and whatever. But their path was significantly easier.
Can I ask you
a
question? Yeah. Why do people, I find this very interesting. I just want to split open my brain, and really the brain of the listeners for a second. Why do people need me, more than anybody, to admit stuff?
Because you're not being honest about it.
Are you going to finally come clean about Lindor?
Yeah.
Come on, who cares? As long as I give him credit when credit needs to be given, what's the little, not even the pound of flesh, what does it make you feel better? Does it make you feel better if I were to say on the air, oh my God, the Yankees been so lucky, they got this and this JV
not
team.
Lucky. Nobody said lucky.
Well, not lucky, but I mean, the road is so much easier. Like, from a Mets perspective, does that make you feel better that Pete's got one hit or Lindor's got one hit?
No, it's not about
or
Mets.
Or Alvarez is hitting 0-29 or can't make a throw to second base. What does it do for you people?
Here's what it does. It matters to you acknowledging reality.
Well, the reality is the Yanks are up 2-0. That's the only reality that I care about.
And the reality is
my reality.
Well, it's everybody's reality. But the reality is they've also had an easier path. Why can't you acknowledge that?
I think it's pertinent.
What do you mean it's not pertinent? I'm just curious as to why you, like, does it make you feel less than to acknowledge the reality? Nobody's saying they're lucky. Nobody's saying you're taking away anything. They're going to get to the World Series, and that's a great thing. However you get there, it's hard to get there. But their path has been easier.
But you just said something interesting. You said nobody's trying to take anything away. That's exactly what they're trying to do. They're trying to diminish the accomplishment of, now, by the way, you're only halfway home, so there is no accomplishment yet. But when somebody calls me up and says, hey, BT, I loved you. I listened to you forever, but you're annoying me with this. Please at least come clean. The Yankees' path is easier. If I were to engage in that, say, Rob, you know what? You're right. All right, listen, the Royal stink, the Guardian stink. Right. Now, that is me minimizing otherwise why would and making the Met fan in their own twisted sinking world feel better.
Has nothing,
and I'm not going to give it to him.
I don't think it has anything to do with the Met fan.
That is definitely because no Yankee fans calling me up saying, hey Brandon, could you be honest about it? Yankee fans are saying, so Met fans asking
me. Let me ask it this way then. Forget the Yankees. Have the Mets had a difficult path to the World Series, a more difficult path than the American League?
The National League's better.
So that's it. That's all they were saying.
But that's not what I was asked.
It's the same thing
about the Yankees. Not really.
It's the same thing.
No, we're conflating two things here.
No.
That's not the same thing. Asking me, Sal, if somebody, hey, are the Yankees, like, is the Yankees' path easier? Is different, though it's kind of rooted. I know what you mean, loosely translated, but it's not the same as saying, it's not quite the same as saying, is the National League, you know, stronger than the American League, which I admit that it is. So if you want to extrapolate an answer from what I just gave you there, go ahead and be my guest. But that's what you're getting.
National League stronger. You just said it yourself. Take away from the Yanks' accomplishments. BT and Sal on the fan. More your calls. Actually, we got Jonathan Casillas coming up. When we come back, we'll do a little Giants here ahead of their big game with the Eagles. BT and Sal back on the fan. We'll get back to the baseball stuff in just a little bit and continue with your calls at 888-808-1019. Right now, we're going to talk a little Giants with our buddy Jonathan Casillas. You know, Jonathan, I'm fired up about this game. The one thing is I cannot get past the significant injury of Andrew Thomas. What are we looking at here for the Giants' new offensive line going into the Sunday versus the Eagles?
What's up, fellas? Yeah, it's a big time injury. You know, we talked about before the season, you know, what's the most, you know, which position we don't want to see go down. And we all said Andrew Thomas. Like, that was, he was like the exception. Like, we didn't include him because if he goes down, we're in a world of trouble. And I do believe we're in a world of trouble with Andrew Thomas going down. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's been playing at that all-pro level like he has been in the past. But he's still the best offensive lineman that the Giants have, one of the best players on the team, one of the best players in the NFL. With him going down, it's questions, right? What do you do? Do you put Evan Neal at left tackle? He's been predominantly working at right tackle. Does Azudu go to left tackle? Does, you know, Illuminor go kicked over to left tackle and then Azudu or Evan Neal goes up? So it's a lot of questions. You know, Dayball's probably not going to say anything until game time. You know how Dayball is. So I'm sitting here with my hands in the air, like, what are the Giants going to do? I have no idea. But to minimize this in any type of way is a sin, because Andrew Thomas is a great freaking player.
Yeah, he really is, man. And it's an absolute shame. I think it's going to be Azudu, by the way. That's my opinion. The fact that Evan Neal doesn't even seem to be really under consideration tells you all you need to know about Evan Neal, no?
It baffles me, guys. It baffles me that he's not playing at all. Like,
he stinks.
First of all, I hear you, but I'm saying like this. I'm not even talking about the five or the six when they bring in an extra lineman. I'm thinking a field goal pro when they bring in two extra linemen.
Yeah.
Bro, he has zero snaps this year. I don't even know a player in the NFL that suits up for every game that has zero snaps. Yes. I have, besides a backup quarterback.
Yeah,
I don't know. It's very concerning to me. I don't understand it, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. But we'll see. We'll see what happens on Sunday.
Understood. One more thing about Thomas real quick. So last year when he basically shredded his hamstring early against Dallas, everything changed. And maybe it would have been a good season anyway, but it really complicated the first six or seven games without him. It's 2 years in a row now, and he is a great player. He's 25. Two leg injuries. At what you played, I don't know. At what point do you start to worry about just being a great injury-prone player?
Good question. So I feel like I was an injury guy. You know, I feel like if you look around the league, like a Odell Beckham, he's an injury guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some guys are susceptible to injuries. You know, like everybody can't be a Ray Lewis. Everybody can't be a Rondé Barber who plays 17 years, doesn't miss a game. I don't know what it is. I think it's the integrity of bone density and ligament structure, to be honest with you, because, like, like I literally could not stay healthy, fellas, like my entire career. I was always freaking hurt.
Was it soft tissue or was it, like, bone vertebrae stuff?
I had a lot of ligament stuff.
Got it.
So I had MCLs, meniscus. Yeah. I had my Lisfranc in my foot. I had a shoulder deal. You know, I think some guys are just more susceptible than other guys. Of course, you have freak of nature type injuries, and it looks like, you know, Thomas might be one of those guys, you know, but look, I played 9 years after missing my whole second year with a Lisfranc injury, you know, so it's not impossible for him to bounce back and be good for the rest of his career. But, you know, it's a problem now. And I think, you know, if he does, you know, come back and gets hurt again, it's going to definitely, you know, have implications on whether he's the highest paid offensive tackle in the league or not. You know what I mean? I think that's going to be a problem for him personally, but I don't think that's something that you should worry about. And I say worry about because, look, these guys get hurt. It's the NFL. Everybody gets hurt. You know, it's not about if, it's about when. You know, hopefully he can recover and come back full strength next year.
PT and Sal on the Fan. We're talking with Jonathan Casillas ahead of the Giants-Eagles game Sunday at 1 o'clock. A huge game for Big Blue. So how do they compensate for Jonathan offensively? They've been struggling anyway. Now without Thomas, how do you make up for that?
To be honest with you guys, we're sitting there watching the game, and I'm Bob Papa. You guys know Bob. He does the play-by-play. He sat down for an extra 30 to 40 minutes after the game because he was so puzzled at what he saw out there. Like, I don't understand what we're seeing at MetLife Stadium, because on the road, the Giants look like a capable team. They look like they can score some points. Their defense, you know, two wins on the road, 7 sacks and 8 sacks apiece. Not that the defense, you know, the defense actually the ones that kept them in the game last week, but offensively, one touchdown at home in 3 games, basically all field goals, and then now you can't make field goals. It's like, what are we watching here? You know, I'm sitting there looking like, I swear that this is going to be a high-scoring game. The defense for the Bengals is not that good, rushing-wise, passing-wise, and the offense looked stagnant the entire game, while the defense, and this is what I said, we talked to Dave Statham. He was the play-by-play guy for the Bengals right before the game. And I talked to him. I was like, hey, what is it about Joe Burrow that he never looks rattled? Like, he always looks like Joe Burrow, even when he's getting sacked 8 times in the playoffs. Like, he always looked like Joe Burrow. I swear, guys, that was the first time I see Joe Burrow look rattled. And the Giants could not capitalize on it. What is going on? I'm like, what am I watching here? Why does this team look like this at MetLife? And this is 2 years now with Daniel Jones at MetLife. Two years of him just not being a capable quarterback at home. I don't know what I'm looking at, fellas. I don't know what I'm watching.
Well, I mean, I can easily volley back and say when you don't know what you're looking at, you probably do know what you're looking at. You know what I'm saying?
I see what you're saying. But what? Why the big discrepancy from away to home? You know, like, I don't, I understand, like, okay, he's not a good quarterback, but he plays pretty good on the road for some reason. But then at home, it's like, what is this? What am I looking at home?
Do you think he's a good quarterback, Jonathan? The discrepancy. Bottom line, you think Daniel Jones is a good quarterback?
No.
Okay, me neither. And it's not a big secret. Like, so go ahead, continue. I'm sorry to interrupt. Go ahead.
I can't defend what I'm seeing. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to lie and say that I'm seeing a good quarterback play at football. Like, MetLife Stadium, the guy has 1 touchdown in 3 games. Like, I don't – and then last year, I can't even put last year in there because that makes him far below what I'm even seeing this year. You know, so it's mind-boggling to me. I'm just trying to figure out because, first of all, guys, I love playing at home. I love playing at in night games. But it's like he's 1-14. Was it 1-13, 1-14 in primetime games? And it's like this is what – like everybody dreams of not just playing in the NFL, but playing Sunday night football, Monday night football. I don't think anybody dreams of playing on Thursday night football, but – like, you dream of those moments at home in front of your crowd. Yeah. And I just don't understand what I'm seeing, guys.
I mean, it's been so bad, it should probably be a Jet instead of a Giant. Jonathan Casillas, BT and Sal, here on The Fan.
You know, BT, I'm so glad you don't care as much about the Giants as you do the Jets, because I heard you the other day.
Oh, gosh.
I saw you throw the helmet. I was like,
oh, you did? You're actually so wait till you hear me Monday. If they don't show up in Pittsburgh Monday, I don't know what I'm going to do Monday. Listen, one of the reasons I love having you on, and we love having you on, Jonathan Casillas, by the way, BT and Sal on The Fan, part of the Giants broadcast crew, played for the Giants, great, is that you, unlike a lot of people in your position, this is the ultimate compliment, by the way, you straddle the line of being objective, but also being raw and keeping it real. So we relate to you, all right? I got to say, though, even in those moments of rawness and realness, there's still elements of positivity. This is the first time, and we've had you on probably 15, 20 times by now, so something like that, where I almost feel, and I'm hearing despondency, like I feel like you think the season's over. Am I wrong?
No, I don't think the season's over. I really don't. This is a huge game this week against Philly. I can't put anything on the offense, right? Because what I'm seeing, you know, I'm literally week to week with you guys. Like I say, hey, look, you know, after the Seattle game, I said, you know, I wasn't, you know, thinking that they could actually beat Seattle, but they did, and they looked pretty good. The offense looked pretty good. Defense was amazing. This week, I watched the defense go out there and play a great game against a very talented quarterback. And we talked about the Bengals being a good team, and I accidentally said that they were, but their offense is undoubtedly a great offense. 38 points the week before against a very tough Ravens team, and they basically shut them down. 17 points from that Ravens, that Bengals offense with no productivity from the Giants offense. I'm not saying the season is a wash because I've seen teams come out of slumps. I've seen teams turn it around. But this is my thing. Can the defense do, like, the incredible? Can they look incredible? Can they do 7 points allowed? Can they do 10 points allowed at home? Because that's what it's going to have to take. And if you rewind to my 2016 season when I was the captain of the Giants and we went 11-5, we beat Dallas twice that year. That at home, we beat them 10-7, guys. It's going to take those type of defensive performances for at home. If I think they're capable of doing that. If the defense was trash, I would say the season is over. But the defense actually gives them a chance. And I'm talking about a 10-7 game. I'm talking about a 13-9 game. I'm talking about one of those type of games. I think their defense can do that.
Yeah, you look at it, the Giants should have an advantage. You would think, Jonathan, with head coach going in, you would think with the defense, I know Philadelphia's offense hasn't been what it was. It could be dangerous, but still, I mean, on paper, even without Thomas, which sucks to have him, but you get Neighbors back, even with Daniel Jones being the quarterback, I still feel good about this game. I think this is finally the time where maybe the Giants get the Eagles in a must-win spot as opposed to just, you know, the end of the season last year where it didn't really matter much. This is a huge game for the Giants. They got to get a division win. I think they can Sunday.
And the Eagles we're seeing now is closer to the end of the season, 2023 season Eagles, than it was in the beginning of the season Eagles. You know, halfway through the fourth quarter, if I'm not mistaken, against the Browns, it was tied. It was 13-13. And yes, the Browns defense is pretty decent. Their offense is horrible, very horrible. Their offense over there, I think they only scored 6 points on offense. I think they had a blocked field goal. But let's throw away the Browns. Like, the Eagles are a decent team right now. They do have some great talent. A.J. Brown is a monster. He's averaging like 120 yards a game. And Saquon Barkley is coming back to MetLife. That scares me, fellas. I know Saquon. He's a prideful guy.
Yeah.
And if Sirianni is smart, you would try to give him the ball at least 30 times in the game. He's not a bad receiver.
Don't you think there's only so much he could do? Like, I get what you're saying, and in theory, yeah, he'd want to stick it to him and go nuts. He's going to be booed vociferously. But don't you think there's only so much he could do as a running back? It's kind of out of his control.
Yeah, of course. I mean, he doesn't get the ball every play. The guy that gets the ball every play is Jalen Hurts, and we've seen Jalen Hurts be an excellent quarterback, and we've seen him be a subpar quarterback. Who's the quarterback we're going to see show up on Sunday is the question. A.J. Brown is healthy. A.J. Brown is scary. Devontae Smith is very good. Goddard is good. They have a great offensive, you know, talent pool led by a questionable Jekyll and Hyde type of quarterback, right? But look at the other side, Daniel Jones. What Daniel Jones are we going to see? You know, if Jalen Hurts show up like we've seen him in 2022 or Jalen Hurts, we've seen him in the beginning of 2023,
yeah,
it could be a very long day for the New York Giants.
Well, you know the answer. The game's at MetLife, so we know it's Daniel Jones who's showing up, not the good one.
Thank you, Jonathan. Hey,
all right, fellas. Good talking to you,
you
man.
Something else you wanted to add there real quick? Go ahead if you got
something. What's the kid's name? What's his name? The kid that always kills the Giants. Scott, what's his name?
Boston,
he's a running back.
Boston Scott?
Boston.
He's
on, yeah. Yes, that guy.
Oh,
he's not on the team for the Eagles, so I feel a little more confident. I don't know what it is about that dude, but he's like the kryptonite for the Giants. The guy is a jag. You know what a jag is?
Just a guy.
He's a jag at best, but he plays like an all-pro against the Giants. So he's not there, so I think the Giants have a chance.
We'll see what happens Sunday at 1. Of course, catch Jonathan right here on The Fan for all the pregame and postgame stuff. Thanks, Jonathan. We appreciate it.
All right, fellas, take it easy.
See you later, man. He's the best, dude.
Legit,
I love Jonathan Casillas.
Legit love talking to him.
Yep.
Like, I actually can't wait to hang out with him after the season. Hopefully we get together.
The stakeout goes
down. Yeah,
we'll talk about the rails.
Frank wants to hang out and talk some football. We'll get Hoff involved.
Hoff's got
to
come. He's just he's a real dude. And listen, he's in a tough spot. He works for the Giants, and he always, you know, tries to respect the Giants. Never disrespects the Giants, but he keeps it real.
Right.
And that's harder than I think some people would imagine. I don't know if I'm more impressed with him or the fact that you dropped the word vociferously.
Yeah, well.
Very slyly placed. Nicely done.
Yeah, I deduce a lot from our conversation.
Deduce. Yeah. I do lean on that word once in a while. Yeah, it's a couple words I say a little too often. Deduce, I drop that a lot. It's not even a big word.
No, I know. I get it. It's just a
now when
BT
I go to deduction,
word.
I church it up a little bit.
The job market is constantly changing, and at Bowling Green State University, we're evolving too. Working with industries to develop innovative majors in education, engineering, business, and healthcare that will give you an edge when you enter the workforce. BGSU is ranked as the number one public university in Ohio for career preparation by the Wall Street Journal. Personalized career coaching, networking opportunities, and hands-on immersive learning set you up for success. That's the BGSU experience. Learn more at bgsu.edu/careerready.